And welcome one and all. We are back, Parish of the Patriots. Episode number 203 is the 203rd installment. We blew past 200. We just keep rocking on. The weeks just keep on rolling. I'm glad you joined us here, whatever brought you here, whether you're a returning member of the congregation or it's your first time stopping by. I hope you'll get something out of it regardless. If you are new to these parts, we do have a Christian-specific segment. Thus, the name of the show does actually have some real meaning. We have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That roughly hits around the halfway point of the show. I encourage you to stick around and listen to it. I think you'll get something out of it. It's not going to be your run-of-the-mill stuff that you probably would be expecting. Always got to pass the offering plate around, you know. We do that the first part of the show. I know y'all get tired of that, but it just is what it is. But we don't spend a lot of time on it. If you do get something out of the show, I said you put a little something in the plate. It is very much appreciated. We don't have anything behind a paywall. We don't charge for this. You can listen to every single episode, never pay a penny. But if you do get something out of it and you're feeling generous, it does make a difference. And it's really easy. Just go to the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion for the show. And you'll see I got snail mail. We got Bitcoin, got Monero, got the email there. You can drop notes. If you got a weirdo cryptocurrency, I'll take it. I don't care. I'm more than likely to get you an address for that. So just drop me an email. I can hook you up. Now, this is normally the part where we go into the listener supporter mailbags. We go from that to here's our listener supporter mailbag. But you see, the bag is pretty much empty this week. I do have one, and it's going to the Christian-specific segment. We're not going to put it in the first part of the show. But that's okay. You know, you might say, man, it must get discouraged. No, because we do have weekly supporters. I got people that like are monthly supporters. I got people that you know, once a year, you know, they donate and show their generosity. So it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, if you do get something out of the show, it is very much appreciated. So yeah, we just rock off with that. We just rock off into the rest of the show. I always record the shows, by the way, you know, on the weekends usually. Usually on Saturdays, sometimes on Sunday, depending on what I got going on. But normally I record the show on Saturdays. And before I was doing the show, because I check the headlines. I try to look around, just make sure, you know, like the world hasn't exploded outside. And here I am rambling on without reason. You know, you did your show and you didn't say, you know, but the latest big thing, you didn't even mention it. Well, that's why, because I record on Saturdays. So, and I was skimming through the headlines. I'll get it spit out here in a minute. And by the way, the cedar pollen here is horrible right now, and my allergies are awful. I got a frog in my throat. I'm trying to keep the sinus sniffling to a minimum. So that's why some of that tongue tiedness, you're going to get that tongue getting tongue tied, is going to pop up from time to time. And I might start getting kind of hoarse, and that's what's going on. Have no fear. I'm good. We're all good. I was going through the headlines, and I saw a story, and a U.S. Navy SEAL got killed in Ukraine. The Russians killed this U.S. Navy SEAL, and they're not even denying this now. The U.S. isn't denying this. This SEAL, Navy SEAL, got killed in the Ukraine. A guy had been in the service for, like, I don't know, over 15 years or something like that. Now they're explaining it away. They're saying this is just, you know, their explanation is, well, he was AWOL. Does anybody believe that? You got a guy been Navy SEAL for 15 years and they're trying to say, oh, he was AWOL. See, we didn't send him in there. You believe you in the military and they come to you and they say, we're going to send you on this special mission. And by the way, we're going to put you down on our paperwork that you're AWOL, because if you get killed, you know, we ain't going to claim no responsibility. You imagine being such a sheep that you go along and say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'll do, sir. Your family ain't going to get no benefits because they put you down as AWOL. But hey, good job. Good job. Yeah. No, can you just imagine that? You just imagine being such a drone that you sit there and say, yes, sir. Yeah, put me down as AWOL. That way, if and when I get killed over there, y'all just denounce me and say you never knew who I was. Imagine how people want loyalty. They say you got to have loyalty, but it never goes both ways, you know. He's a loyal soldier. He's a good soldier. He's a good soldier. He follows orders without question. He's loyal. Loyal to the flag, loyal to America. I always find that foolish. Not the sense of loyalty. I do believe in a sense of loyalty. I find it foolish when people have this idea of loyalty without the concept that it goes both ways. A really blaring example of this is people that are still droning on and on about Trump, you know, after January 6th. After the fact that he had the ability before he left office to issue a blanket pardon for all those people so they couldn't have their shit show trial, their kangaroo court, so they couldn't round people up and throw them into a special prison for being Trump supporters. And he threw them all under the bus and went off to Florida. And then he'd be coming around talking about, well, support me, I'm going to probably run in 2024. And people are like, yay, Trump 2024. No, got no loyalty. Loyalty is a two-way street. Otherwise, you're just a fool. You're just a pawn. And man chooses to say, well, we just go ahead and let them people go because the media might say bad things about me, be bad for me. That's not loyalty. That's just narcissism. Anybody that demonstrates loyalty after that to that person, that's on you. It's like the old saying, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, I mean, when somebody demonstrates loyalty both ways. Sir, yes, sir, I'll go to the Ukraine. Put me down as AWOL. A loyal soldier. How are they being loyal to you? They putting you down in AWOL so they can say they never know who you were. They ain't loyalty. That's just using you. That's just abusing you. That's just awful. I hate that. And you know, living, as you know, I live here in Texas and I can speak for Texas and the South in general. But you know, and I don't know about the rest of the country. I suspect rural areas in the rest of the country are all pretty much the same, but like in Texas and in the South in general. We've been subjected for years since 9/11. We've been subjected with our heroes propaganda, you know. My heroes, you got to honor the troops. You salute the troops, and they're fighting for my freedom. They're fighting for my freedom, which I can't name what freedoms we have anymore because everything, it's ever shifting. It's ever changing. The rules are always moving around what you're allowed to and not allowed to do. We went from freedoms to everything is privileges. But they raised this whole military thing up to, and of course, this too is self-serving. They've raised this whole, you know, honor the troops, and they create this hero aura, you know. Some guy will get blowed up and killed in some pointless war on the other side of the world, shooting people that were never a threat to the home country because he's fighting for the freedom and the democracy of who we are. And like they'll bring the funeral parade through town sometimes, you know, and they'll have fire trucks with their ladders up with giant American flags hanging down. And I'm not ridiculing people for doing that. It's just misplaced patriotism. You know, people want to be part of something bigger. You know, people find this hopelessness in their lives, you know, and they tell these young men that have no future. You know, they have no future. And they tell them, well, you can always have the option of joining the military. And you, too, could become a hero. You're not a hero till they bring you through in the casket with the flags hanging over. But you could be a hero. And then they get in there. And, of course, they brainwash them to blindly follow orders. And that's what they do. They brainwash these guys to blindly follow orders so that when it's to the point that they say, well, you've been in here all these years. And we're going to order you. We're going to have you go into the Ukraine. Again, we all know that's what this is. We're going to have you go into the Ukraine, but now, like, if anything happens, we're putting you down as AWOL, and because we're going to say we don't know anything about you. And instead of being like, well, so you want me to loyally follow orders and go do this, but you ain't going to give me nothing in return. You're going to say you don't even know who I am. Go do it for God and country, son. And they're brainwashed to the point that they say, sir, yes, sir, I'll get right on that. I don't know. You know, people ask me sometimes, you know, well, what kind of advice would you give? What kind of advice would you give to young men? And it's like, well, I don't know, because I don't know each individual young man's, you know, situation. You know, I don't have any way to do that. But the one general piece of advice I give is don't participate. Whatever you do, don't join the military. There's no place for you there. I was thinking about this the other day. Because, you know, we do have this whole specter of World War III with China and Russia. And I was thinking about how they have spent years now, essentially in every aspect of our society, including the military, telling regular straight white males that they are not welcome. In fact, they've been openly hostile to straight white males. Well, we don't need you. We need women. We need diversity. We need alphabet people. We need all of these. We don't need you, white man. And that's fine. That's their prerogative, by the way. In fact, I'm not critical of it at all, because I think you should welcome their message that you don't belong there. You're a problem if you're there. You should withdraw. Because you see, all of this stuff functions with competent people, shall we say, with competent people running it. And see, if they're telling the people that are going to statistically have the highest overall competency that they don't want you running their destructive system, then that's a good thing. You should heed their message and you should stay away. You can see all of it breaking down. And because this is what I predict. This is what I predict is happening as this continues to escalate. Unless by some miracle we wind up with like a better elite taking over or saner people getting the reins of power. And I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see any opening where that's going to happen. But barring that happening, what I predict is as this escalates into just an open war where they quit saying the guy was AWOL and they're just sending troops and advisors, quote unquote, and escalating it, as they continue to lose, and they will, all of a sudden, they're going to throw all of that other stuff out the window. You're going to quit hearing about how we need diversity, inclusion, women, and alphabet people in the military, and there's no place for straight white men. And all of a sudden, they're going to be cranking up the, we need our heroes to step forward for God that we don't believe in, and country, which we're not going to define, and for our people, which we're not going to talk about, which is just a very vague term. We need you to step up and defend America. You got to defend our values, which, again, won't be defined for you. You're going to have to step up. Fight them over there. You're going to see. I do. I think you're going to see, because the incompetence level is not going to be able to be disguised. You're seeing more and more systems break down, that used to function with like nobody even noticed them. Nobody even noticed them. Like for instance, they had to ground all the flights here a week or so ago. They had to ground all the flights because the NOTAM system went down. And they came out just the other day and said, well, we found out the reason that happened is because there were some people like entering data or something, programming, and they accidentally deleted all the files. That's incompetence. I'm not going to say it was, non-white people doing it, but statistically speaking, the more diversity you have, the competence level overall is going to go down, Now, you can sit there and counter that and say, well, statistics, you're going to talk about statistics. Well, statistically speaking, Asian people are more competent at these sorts of things than white people. What do you say to that? How are you going to use them when you're at war with China? See how that works? They could be a China spy. Can't have them. You got to have your army of diversity and alphabet people. That's what you got. We're seeing all of these different areas. If you just watch and you read enough general headlines, you see more and more things that we used to just take for granted that they worked, infrastructure things that you just took for granted that those things worked. You didn't even think about them. They just worked in the background. And you start seeing these breakdowns, as you reduce the number of competent people. And again, I'm not saying anybody who's not white is incompetent. It's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, statistically speaking, you're going to get a higher pool of competent people. That's just how it is. It's their statistics. I don't know what to tell you. But as you get that, as you lose that, the competency levels go. I do. I think if they get off into this war, if this war continues to escalate, I hope it doesn't, but it probably will. All of a sudden, you're going to see all that go away. I do. I think you're going to see the whole thing go away. I think they'll drop the vax mandates in the military. You're going to all of a sudden, they're going to quit talking about, they're going to quit putting out, in other words, they're going to quit putting out these ads, that feature strong, empowered women of color talking about I'm the U.S. Army. As the U.S. Army, and, this is the strength of the diversity. See, she was what was that one ad, you know, and it had the white gal, and it's like, it all started in California. And whenever I see that, it is like, yes, it always does. It always starts in California. She was raised by two strong moms who were lesbians. You ain't going to see that. When the real war goes officially hot and they quit claiming that people are AWOL fighting in the Ukraine, when they, after being 15 years in a special ops unit, when they quit making these ridiculous, stupid claims, when they quit doing that and they start getting their asses kicked all around the world, all of a sudden that's going to go on the back burner and you're going to see lots of ads. I think you're going to see lots of promotional ads. Of, you know, white, strong, muscular, masculine white guys. And it's like, I'm standing up for my people. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for America. My great granddaddy fought Hitler in World War II and saved another 6 million Jews from being gassed to death in shower rooms. And my daddy, he fought in Vietnam. He fought in Vietnam so that we're not all speaking Vietnamese today, because, you know, that's what they were going to do. We had to fight them over there so we wouldn't have to fight them over here. Me, I'm going to step up. It's my turn to step up and defend my people, defend America. You're going to see that. No, I do. We're going to see that unless they just decide that that's not going to work and they institute a draft, which I hope they do not do. I think there's a lot of people say they're going to do the draft, and maybe they will. I hope they don't. If they do, that's going to have a whole bunch of problems all in of itself. Because you see, you got all these Ukraine standers on Twitter that run around and put their Ukraine flags up and talk about, I stand with the Ukraine, and we're going to call Russians orcs and all of this other stuff. And we're going to deny the reality on the ground that the Ukrainian army basically doesn't exist anymore. And you've got Navy SEALs over there fighting now, and they're getting their stuff pushed in because the Ukrainian military pretty much doesn't exist. You know, they can sit there and posture on social media. They can sit there and say, I support the U.S. government. You know, we should support the Ukraine for however long it takes. But when those same people get a draft notice in the mail and says, it's time for you to go. When they get the draft, they're going to be like, whoa, wait a minute. What does this have to do with me? That posturing on Twitter bullshit, you know, that's easy because it doesn't cost you anything. All of this fake moralizing, you know, this unchristian moralizing, you know, we have a different morality. What's your morality? I'm pro-child trannies and I stand with Ukraine. That's my morality. It doesn't cost anything. It's just posturing on social media. Those same people get a draft notice in the mail, and you have the Wojak guys, you know, the guys standing there pointing with their mouths open. Whoa, draft notice. I got to go to the Ukraine. Wait a minute. Now all of a sudden it's going to cost me something. But I thought you stood with the Ukraine no matter what. Well, it's different. Second problem they run into with instituting the draft is, as every time they institute the draft, they got to find a way to exclude themselves. You know, ain't nobody named Clinton or Bush going to get drafted to go fight no damn war. You know, none of these very filthy rich people are going to go fight for freedom in America that they'll claim they believe in. They'll stay back here and support you by putting their flags up on their Twitter accounts. But they ain't going to go. They want everybody else to go. So they're going to have to put these loopholes. Now, I mean, in times past, they could do that and kind of sort of get away with it because there wasn't the level of awareness. But in this day and age of the internet, this day and age where information is available, I mean, people are going to figure out real quick. Plus, people are much more jaded than they were in generations past because they've seen the U.S. government's work before. And they're going to know. I just got a draft notice in the mail. But all these rich Wall Street people, they ain't going to no draft. How come they're excluding all of these other people, but I got to go? We know who's going to get drafted. Women ain't going to get drafted because that's just stupid. I'm not putting you women down. I'm not putting women down, but you know, they can sit there and talk about my equality all they want to, but we all know that's bullshit. You know, in your heart of hearts, that's bullshit. Women ain't going to go to an old front line. Because if they get down to the point of instituting the draft, it's because now they can't keep denying reality. They can keep denying reality, or they're just 100% going to lose their war like in the first 6 weeks. And now they're desperate. And they're going to send no women to the front line. That ain't going to accomplish anything. You know, we know who's going to get drafted. Poor white guys from the South, Mexicans from South Texas, and poor black men and young black men from the inner cities. That's who's getting drafted. Wall Street people ain't getting drafted. They probably do like Zelensky and say, well, you know, Jews can go to Israel. So they don't have to get drafted. We know who it's going to be. Poor white guys from the South, Mexicans from South Texas, and black guys from the inner city. That's who's getting drafted. That's who's going to get sent. The rich people ain't going. They ain't going. We all know they ain't going. And that's the problem. That's kind of one of the hiccups with the draft. I think before they go that far, unless the thing just starts going downhill so quickly, they just start running around being desperate. I think instead what you're going to see is you're going to see these ads talking about heroes in America, and they're just really putting it out there, and they're going to encourage everybody to go along with this shit and wave their American flags and hang their American flags and their Ukrainian flags off their porches and ha ha hooray, and we got to march off for the glory of gay anal in the Donbass or whatever. Try to get people to join in. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. And if you're older, don't let your kids, don't let your grandkids fall for it. You need to be the one to sit down and tell. Don't assume they know. Look, you need to be the one to sit down and say, look, son, look, grandson, whatever the case may be, nephew, whoever. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Don't fall for that. Don't fall for that. Don't do it. They're lying. They will treat you like shit. They will feed you into the meat grinder. They have no qualms about 15 plus years of service and then writing you down as AWOL when they send you off somewhere you're not supposed to be. It's your role. It's your role to tell them. It's your role to discourage them. They're going to try to really hype the Patriots. We saw it after 9/11. They're hyping the patriotism. You got to go stop Saddam Hussein. His weapons of mass destruction. Otherwise, we're all going to be speaking Farsi, just like we were going to be speaking Vietnamese. Yeah, I saw an article talking about that. I saw an article the other day, and some idiot was writing about it. And it's so amazing because, I don't know, I don't even think it's necessarily because you get old enough, you start seeing the same things get drugged back out again. Because, you know, but if you like study enough and you talk to people, you know, like you talk to people who are older and they can tell you what things were really going on back then. And you study and you read and whatnot. Anyway, I saw this deal the other day and this guy was right and he was scaremongering and he was like, we have to stop Russia. We got to stop Russia right now from the Ukraine because it's like dominoes. It's like dominoes. You see, if Russia takes Ukraine, then Poland's next. And then they're just going to roll across Europe, all these dominoes, and then they're going to basically take over the world or some shit. It amazes me because that's the exact same thing they said about Vietnam. They said, and this were just like reading stuff because I wasn't old enough like for Vietnam. I mean, I was alive, but I was a small child. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm not a boomer. People think I'm a boomer, but I'm an early Gen Xer. I barely made it into Gen X. But that's the exact same thing they said about Vietnam. They said, we got to go over there because you see, if Vietnam goes communist, then all of Asia is going to go communist. And then all of the world would just be one giant communism or some shit. Well, if we lost, the U.S. lost in Vietnam. And how did that change our lives? How did that change the lives of the American people? Now they're talking about we might have to go to war with China to defend Vietnamese fishing rights. I've told this story before, but I don't remember what it was, but I was sitting around one time and I was looking at, I just unboxed a product and it had a big sticker on it, said made in Vietnam. And there just so happened to be a Vietnam combat veteran that I knew at the time. And I looked at him, I held that up and I said something like, you know, thank you for your service. Yes, because I'm that big of an asshole. But he actually thought it was funny, too. So it was, thank you for your service. I'm so glad I'm not speaking Vietnamese today. You see, we're all going to speak Vietnamese. The dominoes were going to fall. The whole world becomes out. Now they're dredging the same playbook out. See, Russia's just going to roll across Europe. I honestly think it would be kind of lousy if Russia did roll across Europe, but they obviously don't want to do that. I think it would be kind of lousy if they did, but never mind that. They obviously don't want to. That's just bullshit. They're going to keep hyping this crap up because they're going to try to get people, you know, to join the military. Because once the conflict becomes an open conflict, I mean, they're going to lose badly. They already, they tried this proxy thing and they've sent so much stuff over there, they're starting to run low. Yeah, you know, I said here a while back, I said, you know, isn't it kind of funny? Like it wouldn't be a bad strategy. If like for Russia, you know, because they, you know, it's obvious and they've basically pretty much stated that, you know, their goal is to drag Russia down and drain it of its resources, you know, and they drag them into a quagmire into the Ukraine. But they're so arrogant, and there's so much hubris here, they don't stop to ask who is the one getting dragged into a quagmire. Is it Russia or is it the Ukraine? Or is it the U.S. and the West? That's actually getting dragged. Because, I mean, it wouldn't be a bad strategy if you were Russia, hypothetically speaking. Because I don't know. And I really mean that. I'm not doing like a hypothetically speaking, like, you know, in Minecraft. You know, like, I mean, I have no idea. I'm just a regular guy. I don't know. But if Russia, for instance, as a hypothetical, if Russia decided that conflict with NATO is inevitable, we're going to have to fight these guys at some point in time. Would it not be a pretty sound strategy what they're doing right now? They're kind of sitting back. They're saving their good forces. You know, they're using private forces. They're using, you know, they're saving their most seasoned forces. They're holding them back. And you got the West, the U.S. and Europe. They're like running out of shit. Like, we're running out of ammo and we're running out of tanks and we're running out of this and we're running out of that. We're running out of artillery shells because we're sending it all to Ukraine. I'm thinking, and again, I don't know that that's the case. I don't even necessarily think that's the case. But whether it's an intentional thing or not, the reality is what it is. And you've got the U.S. and NATO that currently are the ones running out of stuff. They're running out of artillery rounds, they're running out of weaponry, they're running out of this, they're running out of that. They're already out of Ukrainians to feed into the meat grinder, so now they're having to feed other people in and pretend they're AWOL or whatever. That's not a bad strategy. You know, I said earlier, I don't think Russia has any intentions of rolling across Europe, but you know, if they did, what's stopping it? Besides, you know, things going nuclear, heaven forbid. But other than that, what's stopping it? Because, like, the West, they're running out of stuff. They were saying back in April, well, Russia only has 2 weeks' worth of missiles left. They're going to run out of missiles. They're still dropping missiles. You can imagine being in Ukraine and you hear the latest power station that's held together by duct tape getting blown up. And you're like, it's that 2 weeks has already been up. What's going on? What's going on with that? I don't know. It's just one of those things. And it just kind of works out like that, you know. They blowing up. Who's getting dragged into the quagmire, whether it's intentional or not? That's how it's working out. We drag Russia down. We drain them of resources. Meanwhile, the Russian economy is doing fine. They're obviously not running out of weaponry. They're a long way from running out of people. You know, unless you believe it. I mean, the Western numbers for Russian casualties are a joke. They're not running out of people. They're not running out of military resources. That's all being happening on the side. Western Europe is being radically deindustrialized under the cover of this story. And it's Western military that's being depleted resources. Who is the one that's actually being drugged down into the quagmire? Makes you think. And like I say, it doesn't even have to be like a Russian strategy to do this. That just be the fact that people that are running the West are so incompetent. And honestly, that's probably the most likely scenario. It's just the people calling the shots in the U.S. and the West are just that stupid. They're just that incompetent that it's worked out this way. Anyway, it is an interesting look on the clock. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. But it is interesting. It is interesting to watch these things unfold and to be able to say, it's really fortunate to be able to be to be able to step back and look at the big picture, you know, to just not get hyped up in any kind of, I don't know, team cheerleading like people tend to do, you know, but to step back and look at the reality of the situation and then to compare that to the ridiculous and laughable propaganda that's being pushed out there. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. It's going to continue to be interesting to watch all of this play out. We need to go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment. And once again, I encourage you to stay around, but it is geared for people who are already Christian believers. I mean, that's what the segment for it isn't about trying to get you to change your mind. But you're more than welcome to stick around, listen to it or not. That part is up to you. But regardless, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And before we get into the meat of this week's Christian-specific segment, we are going to the Back to the Listener Supporter Mailbag. I guess, actually, this is just the initial and only dive into the Listener Supporter Mailbag this week. GPD, God bless and keep you. Can you explain what it is meant by taking the Lord's name in vain? Always been curious about that, Mr. T. And, you know, a lot of times we see these things in the Bible, and, you know, we just kind of assume that everybody knows what it means. And really, when you get to discuss it, that's why I enjoy these discussions, because it gives us the opportunity to really get in, because we get to assuming that everybody knows. And actually, the more we think about it and the more we delve into it, we find out that really, you know, maybe we ourselves don't even fully understand by this very plain and simple thing. Now, if you ask the average person going down the street, you went in the average church, you know, you ask them this question, they're basically going to use the GD profanity and say, that's what it's talking about. But do we really think that when this commandment was handed down, that people were going around using that particular profanity? No, obviously not. So it has to have a deeper meaning. It has to have a broader meaning. This can be worrisome, because as we get into it, we find out that, you know, we start really thinking about it and breaking it down. A lot of people actually can get tripped up by this. Actually, a lot of people can fall into doing this very thing and not even realizing, because they've created the simple definition of what that means. What does it mean to take anything in vain? What does vanity mean? Without meaning, pointlessness. To do something in vain is to do something that has no result, that has no meaning, has no actual substance to it. If you think of it this way, then the way to escape from, because you don't want to do it, the way to escape from it is to what? Keep the Lord's name holy. To recognize that, you know, He is God. He's God. Now, as Christian believers, I think this is something, this is a trap that we can easily fall into, for the simple fact that, you know, as Christian believers, we have sonship through Christ. And, you know, our Christian, our spiritual walk is to try to grow closer to God, to try to grow to a greater understanding of God, to try to see what the Lord is doing in the world around us, and to join in on that, to try to participate in that so that we can know Him more and we can be a part of the work that He's doing. And again, that we can gain a greater understanding, a greater closeness to Him. As we go through our spiritual walk, we're trying to get closer to God, to actually know Him on a more, you know, on a deeper spiritual and I would say even a personal way. And in that can become a trap of taking the Lord lightly. You know, I mean, we do want to be close to Him, and we do want to understand, but we should never forget that He is God. He is supreme. If Jesus appeared in front of you today, you'd be on your face instantly and groveling. And yet in our prayers, we tend to forget that. You know, we get so comfortable in it, we forget that humility, that fact that His name, who He is holy. And we start taking it lightly. We start rambling. We're told Jesus, when He was teaching the apostles to pray, said what? Don't think by your many words and your prayers, you're going to, you know, that brings something about like the heathens do. Don't sit there and just ramble in your prayers, He said. You know, just keep it short and concise, because God already knows. And yet in our prayers, what? We can find ourselves just doing these random prayers without any heart behind them, without any meaning. We're just driving along and you're saying a prayer like it's a chant or something. And yet we're taking the name of the Lord lightly in so doing. Another way to look at, you know, the deeper meaning, what this means, taking the Lord's name in vain, is imagine that you have somebody, imagine that you yourself, you've taken up the job. You're going to protect somebody. Let's say it's a family member. You got a child and you're watching over this child and you tell this child, if something bad happens, call on me and I will come to you. And lo and behold, you're sitting about and the child starts hollering like the end of the world has come, like somebody's kidnapping him. And you jump up and you run into the room. And when you run in there, they laugh at you. And they're like, I got you. I was just seeing. And you're like, uh-huh. And you go back. And a few minutes later, once again, they do this very thing. How many times are you going to do that? And then you're going to be like, I ain't even listening to this fool. Now, this time, somebody maybe did. They busted in the window and they're kidnapping the child. But what? This has been like the 12th time the kid's in there hollering bloody murder. In other words, pretty soon, you're going to ignore that child, aren't you? Because they're hollering about you. They're hollering your name out all of the time without meaning, without cause, without truly wanting you to come, like it's a joke. If you take the name of the Lord lightly, don't expect him to take you seriously. If you hollering out the name of the Lord like it's a joke, when you're in trouble and you start calling out to God, don't expect him to jump up and come to you, because you just been acting like it's this light thing. You're just hollering around like you're just checking. You're just checking like that child. Pranking. But it's not a prank. In other words, you want to take the Lord seriously so that he will take you seriously. You know, when you do, you want it to be to where when trouble comes about or you're in distress and you call on the name of the Lord to help you, to sustain you, to lift you up, to lift your spirits up. You want it to be like when you call on the name of the Lord, he's like, well, this guy doesn't call on me for no reason. This guy and hollering my name out just this left and right and whatever. For no reason, something must be up. We can keep going with this because there's so many applications, and that's what I mean. It's like I say, if you ask the average person, they would say, "Well, don't use that GD curse word, that GD profanity, because that's what it means." But it's not. It's a much broader thing that you can fall into. If you turn on the TV and you've got a preacher on there and he says, Jesus wants you to send me every penny in your savings account because Jesus wants me to have a new private jet airplane. He's taking the name of the Lord in vain. Jesus doesn't want him to do any of that. That's bullshit, and he knows it is. He's taking the name of the Lord in vain. If you asked him that, he'd say, I've never used that GD profanity in my life. I don't know what you're talking about, but he's taking the name of the Lord in vain without point. Jesus did not tell him that. You can link this to the Old Testament when God was giving guidance about prophets. You know, if a prophet truly hears God's voice, and you have to understand in those days, if you read, for instance, in the book of in 1 Samuel, when God spoke to the prophets, they literally heard a voice. Like Samuel heard the Lord call and he thought it was Eli in the next room, kept going in there, and Eli said, I didn't call you. He's like, well, you called me. I heard you call me. You know, God said, look, if the prophets are, if I've really spoken to the prophet, it's going to come to pass. But these false prophets, who, shall we say, we're not smiled upon, you know, nothing will come of what they say because I didn't tell them anything. You see, the false prophets lines right up with taking the Lord's name in vain, just making it up. God told me, but he didn't. You get to see they're taking the name of the Lord in vain because it's without point. It's without meaning. They're claiming Jesus told me. No, he didn't. At what point did Jesus tell you? That's just you want one. You want one does not equal Jesus told you to tell everybody to give you their money so that you can, so that you can have one. They give themselves away because again, if you don't want to get caught up in that, then just remember to keep his name holy. Just remember, God is serious. He is a serious matter. I mean, yes, he grants us his grace, and we do strive to be closer to him. But always remember that he is God. He is above you. He's not your equal. He's not at your beck and call. You are the servant. He is the master. So why Jesus warned us to have an attitude of servitude. That's what the whole thing about washing the feet. It wasn't like where the Pope goes out and finds non-Christian immigrants and bows down. No, that's not what that was about. It was about having an attitude of remembering your place. The Lord is above you. He's not your servant. He might come and bless you. He might open a path for you because he loves you. He's your father, your spiritual father. He created you. But never forget, he is above you. Your father on earth is above you. How much more so your father in heaven? You have that attitude. When Jesus told people, he gave the illustration of showing up at a banquet. Don't show up and sit at the head of the table like you're somebody. Because when the master shows up, he's able to say, actually, that seat's for somebody else. And all that's left is that there down the very low, that little spot over at the kids' table. You got to go sit over there and everybody's going to be looking at you and you're going to be embarrassed because you were thinking too much of yourself. The point is, you got to remember that God is not your servant. People that act like God is Santa Claus and they're just going to pray for everything they want and he's going to bring this and he's going to bring that and he's going to bring me more money and he's going to bring me the car I want and the woman I want and this I want. What do you think? You know, I mean, he's the master. You're the servant. God gives you whatever he wants to give you and you're thankful for it. You're thankful for his grace. In other words, all of that was to teach us to remember that God is above. We have to have that attitude of humility. And I guess I'm going about a long way of saying once again that, look, as long as we remember, you know, that the Lord is serious and to keep the Lord's name holy, you know, to keep him holy, to hold him in esteem, to not take him lightly, you know, we'll be fine. You'll be all right. But it is. It's a good question. And again, I'm sorry because I kind of just have this frog method. The cedar pollen right now is just ridiculous. So I'm sorry if my throat kind of keeps cracking up. It's good because, again, you look at this. And as I said, as we open this topic, the average person just thinks of a certain profanity and they think that's all that means. And that's ridiculous. We could sit here and just go on and on and on about the different ways that you can fall into this trap. Just remember that God is holy and he's good and he's merciful and his grace. And we should take that seriously and don't just start treating him lightly. Let's get off into our discussion. We're going to kind of go through 1 Peter chapter 3. We're not going to read the whole chapter. We're going to kind of just skip through, but I thought we'd talk this week because we're kind of getting back on track. You know, last week we didn't look at anything in our Bibles and, you know, I was just feeling somewhat reflective, you know, might not have been one of the best shows, but I was just feeling somewhat reflective last week. We're kind of getting back on program as far as Christian specific segment this week by getting back in the Bible and talking about, you know, the meaning of some of these, some of the stuff. And like I said, we're going to go through 1 Peter chapter 3. I'm just going to be skipping through it. But with the idea of how do we change, you know, what's a revolutionary act? How do we change the world? I was thinking this because people so often, and I say this like a broken record on this show, and I apologize if y'all are sick of hearing it. The only thing you have control over in this world is you yourself, not other people, not the big picture. And people will say, well, you don't really want to bring about change. You know, you get people and they will say, you know, because we know the world is a wreck. I mean, even non-believers, you know, that have any common sense, they look around, they say, we're in clown world. You know, this is a mess. We got to change it. And you'll see these people rage and say, why isn't anybody doing anything? As if nobody is. I often think when I hear somebody bitch and complain that nobody's doing anything, that they're actually complaining at themselves. Why aren't you doing anything? But you are, or you should be, at least as Christian believers, you should be. There's things you can do. You ask one of these people, and if you can get them to be honest, at some point that they can't think beyond, you know, we need to get a bunch of guys together and form a militia and start hanging these people by the lampposts. How are you going to do that? How are you going to organize that? Who's going to be in charge of it? How many guys is that going to take? Because they can send thousands of people. If you somehow miraculously manage to get 20 dudes together in your little militia without three quarters of them being federal agents, and I don't think that would be possible, because how are you going to organize it? More than likely, you're going to be doing it on social media. But if you did, let's say you just stuck with local people and you formed your little militia and you do that whole thing where you go out on the weekends and you dress up in camos and you run around in the woods, you know, you got your black plastic gun and you're out there and you're out there in the woods and you got your camo on and you're rolling around on the ground and tucking, rolling and jumping up and shooting and all of that. And you manage to get together, say, 20 dudes. You got your militia. I don't know. I was going to make up a funny name, and I thought, in my luck, somebody actually has already used that name, and they'll be like all mad at me. I don't need any more people mad at me. But you do. And you're going to march on Washington with your militia of 20 guys and hang people from lampposts. They can send thousands of people to kill you. No, I'm not trying to be, you know, negative, but I mean, that's just reality. It's just reality. We're just a coward. No, no, if we were cowards, we'd just be hiding under a rock somewhere. We damn sure wouldn't be speaking the truth in this world of lies. So how do you change the world? I mean, because that obviously isn't a realistic answer. It's not a realistic answer. So how do you change the world? What is a revolutionary act? How do you change the world? Because, I wanted to lay that mindset out first, and you could tweak it a little bit, but usually you wind up with somebody with that mindset. You know, they somehow want to do 1776 all over again, even though obviously it's not 1776. And it's going to be much more difficult to do so in the surveillance state. Fact of the matter is, any country you live in the West is far more oppressive than the British Crown was to the U.S. colonies in 1776. We're in a full-on surveillance state. That most of the time, the people you run into that would have that club, nobody's doing anything and whatnot, it's because they can't think beyond that mindset. They can't come up with any other original ideas. Now, we're going to get the Bible here in a minute. I'm kind of getting off here, but as I said earlier, they can send thousands of people to come kill you and your 20 militia dudes. And that's under the assumption, the miraculous assumption, that 18 of the militia dudes aren't federal agents, which is more than likely going to be the case. But like I said, assuming that's not the case, they can send 10,000 guys to kill you. Okay, your group of 20 dudes, they're not going to march on Washington. It's not 1776. So how do you change that? You see, the key is the thousands they can send to come kill you. Bear with me. If you take that away, you see, the ruling elite is not very many people. Okay, they're not very many people, and they're not going to come out there and start rounding people up and force you to do, woke ideology in your school and teach your kindergartners how to do gay anal. They don't have the ability to do that. They got to have these other guys. They got to have the thousands of people to go out there and do that very thing. Now you're getting somewhere. You see, you got to find a way to get the other people, to get the thousands, the tens of thousands of people that they can send to force you to do what they want, or they kill you or throw you in a death camp somewhere. You got to get those people to where they say, I'm not going to do that. Well, how do you do that? And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that in 1 Peter chapter 3. You see, this is the revolutionary act. You have to get in a position to where when they tell the thousands of people, hey, those guys don't want their four-year-olds learning how to give blowjobs to grown men. Go down there and shoot them and throw them in jail. And you want to be like, there's nobody to answer the call because they all quit. And the two that were here just said, you can stick that up your ass. I'm not going to go do that. You have to take away the thousands. And how do you do that? How do you get people to quit participating? And this gets back to, you have control over yourself. And you might say, well, I'm not a federal agent. What does that have to do with it? I don't understand. Don't worry. You're going to understand. You're going to understand. You're going to understand how this works, because this is kind of broke down for us here in 1 Peter chapter 3. We're just going to start right at the beginning. And he's going to start right off talking about women. We had a lot about women, because let's be honest. You want to talk about thousands? You got millions of women that are basically at the forefront of the spearhead of the army of global homo. It is what it is. You only have control over yourselves. You only have control over, you can't force people to do what you want them to do. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjugation to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives. He's saying, women, you got the power. Hold yourself up. Have some dignity. You know, women, you know, if you're a woman and you like listening to the show right now and you like, you know, I don't really hear much about women being able to do anything, you know, and I listen to this Parish of the Patriot show, and, you know, about all I hear about women is you shouldn't even allow them to talk in church. I mean, what are we supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? Well, guess what? I got news for you. You have control over yourself. In a world where women go around dressed up as and acting like prostitutes, look, if you want to be revolutionary, don't do that. It can't be that simple. It is. It is that simple. Wives, be in subjugation to your husband. You see, because all these women are in rebellion, because if you're not in subjugation to your husband, then you're in rebellion against God, because that's the order that God has laid down. Now, I understand. I get it. Look, I understand. I know there's been a whole lot of programming about that, huh? They create this illustration that means your husband comes home half drunk and beats the shit out of you and you just take it. It's not reality. I mean, really, I'm not saying that never happens, but that's not reality. It's kind of like how they create this image of stranger danger. You know, when they act like, you know, if you take your eyes off your child for a minute, there's like 500 pedophiles lurking in the bushes, looking to grab them and steal them away and run off. That's why we need a surveillance state. When the reality is that most victims of pedophilia, most children that are victimized by pedophilia are victimized by a family member, not by some stranger. And once again, that's not to say that doesn't happen. It's not to say that doesn't exist, but the reality is much different. The reality is children that are victimized by pedophiles, well, the pedophiles have to have access to them. And how do you have access to children? Well, by family member children. Get a job in a school. Get a job in a daycare. You know, wolves don't hang out in the middle of nowhere. Wolves go where the sheep are. They go where there's prey. You know, predators go where there's prey. They're going to be around them. They create this false reality. Subjugating yourself to your husband doesn't mean he comes home drunk and beats the shit out of you and you put a smile on your face and cover it up with makeup the next day. That's not what it means. If you don't want to be a part of, you want, how can you be revolutionary? Don't dress like a prostitute. Hold yourself up. Even your husbands, who may not be believers, are going to be, look at this and be like, you know, she's putting me to shame. Let's continue on, because we've got a lot to cover here, and I've already rambled so much. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, you're a serious person. You don't sit here just blabbering about nothing. In other words, you have control over yourself. You know, your husband looks and it's like, you know, I wound up somehow with an honorable woman, and when I look in the mirror, I realize that I'm kind of a piece of shit. That's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of embarrassing that when I go to town, everybody's like, you know, murmuring behind me, like, you know, his wife, that poor thing. She's so sweet and she's such an honorable woman. And look at him. You know, I mean, what is this guy? You know, that might motivate him to like straighten up. You know, they might be moved to do something different. Let's skip forward to verse 7. Because it addresses husbands. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife, as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers not be hindered. Again, this is a example of lead, you know, this is demonstrating leading by example. And, well, let's just go ahead and continue on. I want to skip down to verse 10 again, because I don't have time. But I don't have time to sit here and read the whole thing, but you should go back and read the whole thing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips, that they may speak no guile. No guile means what? Falsehood. No lies. Keep to the truth. Let him eschew evil and do good, and let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against him that do evil. And who is he that will harm you, if ye be followers of that which is good? But if ye suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye, and be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled. What is all of this taken together? What does it mean? It means demonstrating. It means changing the world by starting with changing yourself. Because you see, people are watching you all the time. You may say, well, I don't see how that changes anything. Really? Well, you see, look at Christianity itself. It started with Christ, and it started with his 12 dudes, one of which turned out to be not so great. The apostles just went from town to town afterwards, and it spread. Well, why? Why did it spread? Well, because people observed other people living this way, and they're like, you know, these people seem like they're getting along pretty good. It seemed like they found peace and some joy in life. In other words, you are demonstrating the faith. You're demonstrating peace. He's talking about preaching the gospel. You know, you gotta get out there, and you got those people that belong to certain denominations, and they'll come and knock on your door to try to tell you about Jesus. Because they think that's the only way. They have this simplistic view of that's the only way you can spread the message of the Lord. We're supposed to be prepared in all seasons to give a reason for our joyous heart. People ain't gonna ask, how come you in such a bad mood? Why do you have a joyous heart? Why? Wait, you see, because people are seeing that and they're like, hey, I want to be a part of that. This is how you're actually spreading the faith. People look and they say, you know, things are really bad. Everybody I know is negative. I'm negative. But this guy, you know, he'll sit there and agree that, yeah, we're living in a total wreck of a society. But, you know, he seems pretty happy. What's up with that? And what's one thing most people, pretty much everybody wants? They want some form of happiness. And they're going to look at that. Yeah, you can only affect yourself, but if other people see that, if other women look and say, wow, you know, she kind of puts me to shame. She don't dress like a harlot, and, you know, she don't deride her husband. She don't run her husband down, you know, when she's talking to the girls. You know, that kind of puts me to shame. You know, it kind of makes me feel, but maybe I need to, like, improve myself. And other men are looking and saying, you know, that guy, you know, he walks an upright and godly man. And then they change their behavior. And then other people see them. If three people are motivated to improve themselves and change their behavior because of you, and then three people change because of them, and it grows. And it grows. This is a revolutionary act. This is how you spread change. It's how you spread change. Because if it spreads far enough and wide enough, global homo clown world runs out of foot soldiers. A righteous and godly man says, you know what? I'm not going to go kick these people's door in and shoot their dog because they said something you don't like on Twitter. something completely harmless, but it was kind of insulting to you, and now you're telling me to go kick their door in, set their house on fire, and shoot their dog. An upright and godly man is not going to do that. An upright and godly man is not going to put his paycheck above doing the right thing. An upright and godly man is going to say, yeah, no, I'm not going to bring harm to people that have done no harm to anyone else just because you're telling me to. An upright and godly man is not going to blindly follow orders and as though that is an excuse, because in so doing, he announces that he is subject to man and not to God. We can go on. We can go on. How do you conduct yourself? What's a revolutionary act? You know, be sitting around going, I don't know. You know, you're talking about husbands, honor your wives. I'm not even married. What am I supposed to do? Oh, you know. Quit looking at porn. Oh, what? Quit smoking weed. Oh, it's natural, man. What are you talking about? You can't be praising God while you high as a kite. You can't be learning about God. You can't be getting closer to God and the Holy Spirit when you're drugged out of your mind, fool. Man. And see, that's what it is. People are always wanting to hear stuff until you hit the stuff that they like doing. You know, yeah, it's easy if people are talking about other stuff. And it's something I like to try to stay away from. You know, it's easy to sit here and point at other people. You know, and everybody's on board with that. You know, we can sit here and do show after show every week and we get applause. We get applause. People say, that's great. I can do show every week and talk about homosexuals and these homosexuals and how they're sinning. And everybody's down with that. But if we're going to sit here and have a discussion about, you know, basically you're going to have to bring yourself up as a man to the point to where women's lustfulness, they going out and they wearing them look at me pants and stuff, that don't even affect you. Why? Because your heart is so close to God that they can't tempt you to world lustfulness. Whoa, what are you talking about? That's a hard teaching. Yes, it is. Because you see, the standards of God don't move with the world. The standards of God are exactly what they were 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. They haven't changed. It's harder now because the world's crazy. But God's standards, same. And what do we got to do as children of God? We got to try to lift ourselves up as much as we can to God's standards. It's easy. It's easy when we're talking about other people and what they need to be doing. But our concern is, what do I need to be doing? What do I need to be a more godly and upright man? Because that's what you can change. You can't change what other people do. You can change yourself. And trust me, you ain't going to run, as long as you're alive, on the face of this earth, I don't care who you are, you ain't going to run out of stuff to change. Don't worry. If you got thought in the back of your mind, you know, what if I get to the point where I've improved myself, there ain't nothing else. You won't. Trust me, you ain't going to get to that point. You will be a work in progress until you take your last breath on this earth. When you go through that final trial of your faith, when you know you're fixing to leave and now all your opportunities to get it right are gone, and you're going to have to just stand up and face the Lord. He's going to have to get up now and be born into the next life. You're going to have to do that now. That's the final trial of your faith. You ain't going to run out. You're not going to run out of opportunity to work on yourself, to work on your faith, to work on who you are. Stop participating. Stop participating in all of this stuff and all of this worldly stuff. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy life. What it means is what's keeping you from enjoying life are these things, are these things they're trying to drag you down with. You know, chasing after sin never leads to happiness. Satan will always try, and we got to wrap up, but Satan will always try to conflate the short-term pleasure of sin with happiness. And you see this in people's lives over and over, and it's just truly sad. It is. It's sad because you see people get drugged down into further and further degeneracy because they're chasing that short-term feel-good, that short-term feel of pleasure. And yet, they're miserable. They're miserable. You have people. And they just go further and further down because they think they have They have falsely equated, I'll get spit out here in a minute, they have falsely equated momentary pleasure with happiness, and they just keep getting more and more miserable. Sin, look, sin may feel good and may feel pleasurable in the short term, but long term, it is always going to destroy. That's why God tells you not to do it. That's why God guides you not to do it, because he doesn't want you to destroy your life. You know, it's not because he just doesn't want you to have any fun. It's because he doesn't want you to destroy your life. He's telling you, look, this will ultimately bring you down. This is ultimately going to destroy, but it feels good. Yeah, well, you know, that's the catch. It's destructive. It's self-destructive. Anyway, we need to wrap up, but yep. The way you change the world, if you want to lead a revolution, you know, start staying to come out from the world. We talk about this all the time. Come out from them. Don't be a part of it. Quit participating, not just in public where everybody can see you, but in private. You know, start leading an upright life. Start being what you want to be. Start being that man. Start being that woman that's not like everybody else. That's not doing the things everyone else is doing. Satan always tell you that. Well, what are you on about? Everybody else is doing it. That's, you want to lead a revolution? That's how you do it. You do what everybody else isn't doing. You do what the rest of the world isn't doing. Stand out like a sore thumb. Be a woman that presents herself modestly and holds her head up with some pride, because you know what? She isn't acting like all of these whores out here. Stand up. Be different. Be the revolution. You only have control over yourself. If you can't accept that, you're going to be constantly frustrated. And ultimately, you're going to be very unproductive. You're never going to bring about anything. Anyway, we need to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. Read the entire chapter. It's not really long. I mean, you know, but there's nothing worse than sitting here listening to me draw on just reading, you know, so I just kind of skip through. But the whole thing lays out how we change the world, how we conduct ourselves, the attitude we've got to have. And ultimately, like I say, that's the only thing we have control over. We're going to get on out of here. Don't forget, we're on Fridays. I'm on Fridays with Sven for the Daily Nationalist. It's been a good discussion. And by the way, check that out. The last three episodes we've done a trifecta on the Church of England. And I think it's some of our better shows as of late. And it's worth listening to. You realize how far gone, quote unquote, I guess you would say mainstream churches have gone down the tubes. I don't realize. I talk about the MCC, and I don't realize how bad it is. Our last three Daily Nationalists on Friday have been on the Church of England. And this past Friday, especially, it's like, this is how far gone it is. This is why it's important that we do have a place we can congregate, even here on the internet, even here at the Parish of the Patriots. We're going to get on out of here. Again, thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you right here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.